I'm still small. I don't want to be big, he said to me last night, placing a small hand delicately under my shirt and onto my bare belly. I vaguely recalled an advertisement from my childhood, with a tagline something like, "If only they could stay small forever." I can't remember what it was selling. All the things that scare me about his growing up are encapsulated in that moment. If I could just nurse him again, he'd curl up under my armpit instead of calling me butt face, instead of yelling at me and threatening to send me to the naughty spot, instead of asking me to read the same storybook for the fourth time. Our roles would be clear. Me, dominant, all-powerful, self-sublimating, the giving tree. He, snuggly, grateful, quiet, amorphous, not willful. These were roles I had grown both comfortable with and uncomfortable with. This is the last vestige of my baby-rearing life, which has afforded me both opportunities to lead a healthier lifestyle, for example, and excuses, blurring my sense of self and thwarting my ambition. I had heard other mothers say their babies had weaned themselves. I found this hard to imagine. I had stopped nursing my daughter at 2, when I was already pregnant with my son, my resolve to avoid tandem nursing keeping me strong. I had weighed the pros and cons of tandem, which is breastfeeding non-twin siblings, and I decided I wasn't up to the task. I could still remember what a full-time job nursing a newborn was, and I didn't want to add a lanky, toothy, stubborn toddler into the mix. Any possible sibling rivalry was best played out somewhere that wasn't my lap. I had undertaken my daughter's weaning, following advice I had found on several parenting sites, which recommended eliminating one feeding each week. It seemed doable and humane. I steadily went through the stages of desperation, guilt, and nostalgia over the course of a month and a half, culminating with neatly nursing her for the last time on the morning of her second birthday before preparing the pool party. My daughter had never really looked back, and I remembered feeling surprise at her readiness for a process she wouldn't have initiated herself. And I hadn't looked back either, given that within 6 months I had a new nursling. Yet this time, the end of my physical bond with what I was pretty damn sure was my last child was proving much harder to break. I had first started in the spring with some vague idea of separating the weaning from the toilet training. In the end, he'd been completely out of diapers for months and still nursing. At one point, I had cut out the bedtime feed, and he negotiated a switch for a nighttime one to get it back. That there is probably the most interesting thing about weaning a toddler. They can talk. Babies cry, and it's hard to pinpoint what exactly they're going on about. They want something. They always want something. They're cold. They're hot. They need a diaper change. They're hungry. They're having an existential crisis. Or they simply don't want you to be sitting down while you hold them. A baby's cries are relatively opaque, but a toddler is very clear about where you can stick your pacifier. "I want a nurse," he would whine loudly, pulling at my shirt stubbornly on the bus, eliciting mostly disapproving stares. Anyone who nurses past babyhood has to put up with a slew of almost entirely negative reactions, swaddled in concern for the well-being of you or your nursling, and tinged with disparagement. In fact, most of the other mothers I know who do it on the down low. In general, our society refuses to accept our animal nature. Giving birth, for me, put the sexual back in sexual reproduction, whereas before, I would never have thought of a baby as sexual in the more common connotation of the word. When you whip out that gland to sate your child's hunger, many people find it threatening. I also see this as an extension of the village insisting it knows best how to raise your child. Often those commenting were clearly implying that my decision was based on my presumed moral superiority, an implicit insistence that my choice be theirs. What are you, going for the Guinness Book of World Records?
You're going to get osteoporosis.
Is he the one addicted, or is it you?
You're traumatizing that kid.
Why can't you just let it go already? Eliciting mild shame and resistance on my part. Oh, why can't I just let it go already? It's a strange hodgepodge of emotions, ranging from it works so well to improve his mood, / calm him down, / shut him up, to I'm never going to have another baby. Breastfeeding is so emblematic of the co-opting of women's bodies, both voluntary and involuntary. As a species, we are programmed to suck. Nursing becomes a tool, a habit, a crutch sometimes. Notice how many children in strollers have a pacifier in their mouths. We are mammals, defined by Merriam-Webster as any of a class of warm-blooded higher vertebrates that nourish their young with milk secreted by mammary glands. But how old are those young? Well, it depends. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends until at least 12 months of age and continuation of breastfeeding for as long as mutually desired by mother and baby. The World Health Organization recommends 2 years or beyond. The addiction question is an interesting and particularly judgmental one. The metaphor is facile and so ubiquitously applied that it means little, yet it's not without resonance in this case. The truth is that the reality of nursing has very little to do with its cousin, bottle feeding. It is the most mutually interdependent experience I have ever known. On one hand, it has similarities to pregnancy. You're always hungry. You can't stray too far from your kid. Your ingestion of psychotropic, psychedelic substances must be kept to a minimum. In other words, your body is not your own. You are a vessel, a factory of this amazingly dynamic fluid. But pregnancy is more one-sided than nursing. A fetus is basically a parasite. When you're nursing, especially a newborn, you can't stray too far, not only because the baby is completely dependent on you for survival, but also because you'll end up with a female equivalent of blue balls. Yes, blue balls. Remember them? What your teenage boyfriend complained of to get you in the mood? There are times when you'll wake up a sleeping baby just so they can relieve you of your milky burden. And the more they nurse, the more you produce. Talk about yin and yang, about give and take, about the haves and the have-nots. With the introduction of other foods, this interdependence becomes less apparent, but doesn't disappear. I remember having convinced my in-laws to babysit overnight to attend a wedding in Madrid. I arrogantly left my breast pump at home. I hadn't used it in many months. My kid was already a year and a half old. Imagining myself footloose and fancy-free, I boarded the plane. Fast forward to that evening after the reception, when I found myself in my hotel room bathtub, mournfully, manually milking myself. Mentally and emotionally, I was fine with the short separation, even craved it, but the factory in my glands was dutifully clocking in the hours. I began the weaning process in earnest the spring he was 2.5. There were pressures from various sides, including my own. I had a friend who had once told me about using weaning trips with Dad, camping or something, as an incentive for her daughters to look forward to. I decided to take my own weaning trip and booked a flight to Tuscany to see some friends, planning 2 nights away from the children for the first time ever, as a reward and a goal to focus on. I began with the same gradual process I had used with my daughter, eliminating one feeding a week. I cut out the fairly easy daytime sessions and was left with the seemingly insurmountable ones. Bedtime,
1 a.m., 5:30 a.m. I put it off for a week. Setbacks included a fever. His daycare teacher commented on how rarely he got sick, attributing it to his extended breastfeeding. And a fall that quickly caused a darkening ping-pong ball to appear on his forehead. I nursed him so he'd let me ice it. One evening, I spotted a swollen patch on his ankle, the size of a silver dollar pancake. It had a wound atop a red mound that was warm to the touch. I called my husband over in alarm, and we doused it with hydrogen peroxide, which provoked some satisfying bubbles. Then I called the nurse to ask her what to watch for, or if I should take him to see a doctor. I was pretty sure it was a mosquito bite he had scratched too hard with dirty fingernails, while my husband mused on the possibility of a rusty nail puncture. There was a short moment where I thought, maybe I should nurse him. Maybe I should squeeze my magical breast milk on his infected boo-boo. After all, mother's milk has that aspect, part myth and part truth, of panacea. The obvious consequence being that this weaning was a demotion in my goddess status. One bedtime, I was feeling absolutely desperate to escape his clutches, to hand him over to the Sandman and enjoy those couple of hours before I succumbed to sleep myself. Maybe I was transmitting that desperation to him somehow, as he would repeatedly stop breastfeeding in order to demand to breastfeed, barking orders like, "The other one, come on!" as the fingers of one hand worked my other nipple, fiddling incessantly like he was trying to tune in a radio station that was just out of range. I wanted to be anywhere but there, and I was overwhelmed with guilt, making me doubt whether I should wean him under those circumstances, which seemed punitive. The circular thinking was chipping away at my resolve, and yet I didn't feel up to the task of child-led weaning. Even the term gave me the creepy crawlies, and by my estimation, CLW would be at least a year away. I also had to acknowledge that my fantasy of my husband stepping in and replacing me in all of these moments was not going to happen. "Can we talk?" I asked my son the next night as he was paging through a picture book. "We're going to stop nursing." "Okay," he answered, not looking up from his reading. Maybe this was going to be easy after all. Maybe I was the one addicted. At bedtime, he cried for a little while, which I found abso-smurfly heartbreaking. It didn't last long, but the falling asleep did, the playing with the two pacifiers, the sudden cerebralness, as opposed to the visceral cave moments where his mouth was too full to debate where such and such stuffed animal was or whether I should go to the kitchen to fetch a third pacifier. Eventually, he drifted off to sleep. I immediately started thinking about bra shopping. The next night, he had his worst evening to date. Tantrums. Refusing to eat. Kicking. Hitting. Tantrums. But I had to stay on track with my weaning plan. Close my eyes, tuck in my shirt, and think of Italy. Of course, with my eyes closed, I was much more likely to get whacked in the face by a hurled limb. The head-butting, the flailing. Oh, to stick a nipple in it. After such a horrific evening, denying him felt vindictive. The ensuing spanking definitely was. At least that was a bit cathartic. The trip approached and the pressure mounted. As I listened to his cries that would be so easy to assuage with the breast, I thought of the fragrant smell of the Tuscan countryside. I had gotten him down to once a night, and I kept telling myself that maybe he'd forget all about this child's play while I was off eating ricotta. During the day, he no longer even asked, and when he'd bring it up as I trundled them off to bed, I was able to appeal to his common sense. "Come on, you know we're not nursing at bedtime anymore." However,
I was pretty convinced he was nursing more throughout the night to make up for it. The nocturnal feeds had become frantic. It seemed he was noticing the dwindling supply and insistently trying to pump it back up. One night I returned home after a few beers with my breasts full. He was already whimpering before I could piss and brush my teeth. As he latched on, I ran a finger under the elastic of his diaper, extracting the wedgie that could mean the difference between waking up dry or in a wet spot. He squirmed a little and flung a leg over me, territorially. In theory, I was still making psychological progress, but my trip to Italy was only a little more than a week away. At night, when he wakes up, he is loud, like an unsatisfied customer demanding to speak to your supervisor. "Nurse," he says, and then he starts to cry in the horizontal version of stamping his feet. I worry he's going to wake up everyone in the house. I worry he's going to keep me awake all night. I pull up my shirt. On the night before I went to Tuscany, I heard him crying. I had already started to slip and wasn't limiting his nursing during the night. Sometimes he would ask for it up to 4 times, starting at 1 or 2 a.m., and ending right up until the clock went off at 8. I tried to maintain no nursing after the alarm, but I think I fudged it once, just for a few precious moments of lying in bed with my eyes closed. That night before my weaning trip, when I heard him, I started to make my way to the bedroom. For a split second, I paused in the doorway thinking, well, if I nurse him, he'll go back to sleep quietly and relatively easily. If I don't, he'll probably wake up his sister and keep me from my reading longer. I might even end up falling asleep in my clothes again. But no, that would be a step backward, and I'm about to be away for 2 nights, so it would be kind of a tease. So I screw up my courage and I just go in saying, "What's wrong? It's okay. You're fine. I'm here." And I see he must be cold, and I cover him up, and I cover up his sister, and I kiss his chest, and I put my arms around him. Then I kiss his face, which wakes him up a little bit, because I catch one of the long hairs around his ear in my mouth, and it pulls slightly. But he doesn't say the word nurse. I feel like he's given me a gift. A real gift, not some macaroni necklace. I rub his hair and kiss his chest again, and he curls up, using my forearm as a pillow. I had brought my pump to Tuscany, but hadn't taken it out of my suitcase. He was 2.5 years old. When I returned, he was already asleep. I slipped in beside him on the futon, and he turned and said, "Mama, nurse." He hadn't forgotten, and I didn't refuse. But the real backsliding came that summer, on vacation. After 5+ hours on a train, we are on a bus. A man dressed in a captain's uniform comes down the aisle to reprimand my children for being noisy. I find myself thinking, I do have a superpower. Why not use it? I pull out a boob and keep the kid quiet and contented. Yet I feel like an alcoholic drinking from a bottle stashed behind the toilet tank. And a week later, it was clear to me why this power was also a responsibility, to paraphrase Spider-Man. My nipples are tender, and he's asking for it every chance he gets. He is no baby. He has a clearly defined neck. He can request it in a range of registers, in several languages, and in his own private one. It is a plea, an entreaty, a threat, blackmail. It is primal and superfluous. It may just be the oldest trick in the book. But as all parents know, some rules have to get broken on vacation. When we return to the predictability of school and home, I get back on the wagon. I plan another weaning trip, further away and longer. My husband makes me promise he will be fully weaned by then, and I gradually start taking out 1 feed a week. Doable. Humane. He last nursed on the eve of his 3rd birthday, December 21st, 2012. He had a good long run. The world did not end that day, as some had interpreted the Mayan calendar to predict. But the holy trinity of my womb and breasts flipped over the door sign to read closed or out of business. My breasts were now, once again, for grown-up recreational purposes only. I would have to assess them and see what was left after 5 years of nursing. The world had not ended on that winter solstice, but a certain smaller world had ended for me. My son had turned 3, and I had made good on my goal of weaning him, after about 9 months of working at it. Even a month later, and a full cup size smaller, I would still periodically squeeze a nipple and be slightly surprised to see the beads of milk emerge. I could still nurse him, and a part of me wondered how much of my identity hinged on that. I had to push down the primal, primate longing and remind myself of the gnawing, the toddler entitlement over my body, the guilt-free joint I could smoke after he eventually fell asleep. Then I would cuddle him close and stroke his hair, trying to share the same kind of sweet, soothing moment without breastfeeding. Sometimes I too felt bereft. By that point in my life, breastfeeding came so naturally to me. It had been such a constant for so many years that I could find myself at a dinner party sitting across the table from someone else's baby, and my antennae would just be on the alert. And wine was spilled on a shirt, and the crying baby was passed hand to hand, and somehow some part of me wanted to pull out one of my glands and stick it into the child's mouth. Cannot explain this logically. It involves a swirl of emotions and triggers that connect me more to my cavewoman self than to the person sitting in front of a keyboard right now. In those early days post-weaning, when he would ask to nurse, I reminded him what we'd agreed on, or what I had imposed. I was also reminding myself. He would often begin one of his deductive arguments, saying stuff like, "I'm not a big boy, I'm little, I'm not 3. He'd hold up a couple of fingers, but quickly concede. I didn't even have to counter. One night, during that new bedtime ritual, my eldest chimed in, asking me to put her chapter book up on the shelf for her, because she's too lazy. Which reminded me that as parents, I firmly believe we are duty-bound not to always give them what they want. Sigh.